This week on Thingamabob.
Give me a bladder any day. They don't care about single wenches.
Neither do I.
Great.
Condon.
Okay.
With nine.
Okay. In France?
England.
Okay. Stay tuned for more.
Baseball bats and gallon cowboy hats and more. Magic rings and other nerdy things in store. Listen on in, it's time for Thingamabob. Better tune in, it's time for Thingamabob.
Thingamabob!
Well, hello, Josh.
Well, hello, Bree.
Hello to everybody listening.
Welcome to Thingamabob.
This week's theme is sexy and protection.
Just sexy protection things.
Sexual protection.
Do you use sexual protection?
Yep.
Good. Thank God. Do you have a rose this week?
I have a rose and a thorn this week.
Great. Can't wait.
My rose and my thorn are both the TV show Euphoria that I have started watching.
Oh, you're only on season one, though, which I heard.
No, I'm on season two because season one, I had nothing to do these past couple of days.
Love.
And season one is only 8 episodes long. They were long episodes, but
right.
there were only 8 episodes, and I thought there were going to be more, but there's not. So I am actually caught up now. I'm watching, like, the most, they drop new episodes on Sundays. So they're only on episode 5 now, which is the one that they just released, and I just started. So I'm
all caught up.
I'm all caught up on Euphoria. And my rose, I guess, is that I didn't watch it for a long time because I was like, I'm not really that interested in like teenagers doing drugs. Like we've seen it before and everybody says it's really good, but like whatever. I don't care that much.
Fair.
And then I needed something to do and everybody would not stop talking about Euphoria all over the internet, so I decided to check it out, and I did really like it. It is very well done. The acting is good. However, my thorn with it is that it is so highly unrealistic, and, like, I get it. It's a TV show, but I also feel like there's, like, certain aspects of it where I'm like, you still need, like, an element of believability, mm-hmm. And I know we've been seeing it all over the place of like, oh, these kids go to Euphoria High because this is the only place that
right.
exists where this would happen, which is true. It's like there would be no place that had all of these issues all at once. Like, it might be like one thing that the kids are going through, but not everything necessarily. So I don't know. The believability is questionable,
mm-hmm.
but it is very good. And this most recent episode, I'm only 15 minutes in. And I thought that I was way further into the episode than I was when I paused it because it's the beginning is so dramatic and so, like, I don't know. I guess I don't know how else to describe it besides dramatic. But there's, like, this whole big scene and it's, like, a confrontation and it, like, made me cry. Like, I was – Zendaya, I never know how to say her name, is so good and so believable and just, like, very raw. In the moment, which sounds stupid and, like, cliched to say. But it was very effective, and the scene is just really heavy. So when I paused it, I was like, it's only been 15 minutes. Oh, my God.
Is she going to win that second Emmy?
I don't know. I don't know if she'll win the second one, because she did. I forgot she won an Emmy for season one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Do people win back-to-back Emmys for their TV
yeah.
shows?
For TV shows, yeah.
Well, then maybe, because it's really good.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I have to confess something about my feelings towards Zendaya. Everybody talked her up a lot, and I felt like she was good, but sort of like in a Jennifer Aniston way, kind of always played very similar roles, where it felt like her character was just like close to who she was as a person. So I was like, yeah, it's good, but is it really like great acting?
Fair.
You know, but seeing her in this role, I'm like, oh, no, I get it now, because it's a lot. It's
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I didn't. I mean, I think she's okay in Spider-Man.
Right. And I'd seen her in that basically as an adult. And then I don't remember what else. I feel like I've seen her in something else besides Spider-Man and Euphoria.
There you go.
Yeah. And that's my rose and my thorn. What are yours?
My rose this week is that I had my first book club with my ex-boyfriend.
Love that.
My thorn this week is that the book is so mediocre.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's bad, but it's just, long story short, a soap opera.
Oh.
Like a bad soap opera. Not a soap opera. That's a bad example. It's like a made-for-TV drama is what it is.
Yeah.
Miniseries. Caleb keeps calling it a miniseries.
Like Euphoria.
Like Euphoria, but not as good.
Yeah. That's an unfortunate start to something that you're, like, you've never done this book club before, so you'd want to start on something really good in theory.
Yeah. But it's fine, though. Start bad. Maybe it'll get better.
Can only go up from here.
Can only get better. Maybe.
Who knows? There's a lot of bad books out there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's it.
What a speedy beginning for us.
Good. It's just you talking about Euphoria.
It's me talking about Euphoria and you mentioning your book club.
And me talking about, yeah, literally mentioning. You know what, though? I just really don't want to talk more about it because I want to get into birth control because it's so...
Yeah.
And contraceptives is birth control. And yeah. Sexual... what is it?
Sexual contraception? STIs? STDs?
So, remember how it changed from STDs to STIs?
Yes. Because...
I have this vague memory that it changed back.
Really?
That infection was now not the proper term.
Oh, because... I remember because we always called it STDs growing up, and then they changed it, like, directly after we'd had sex ed.
Right.
And so I was used to calling them STDs and then, like, had to mentally actually think about it to call it an STI. Did it? I have no idea if it changed back.
Maybe that's just a weird memory of mine. Anyway, let's talk about it. I can't wait.
Let's talk about it. Just in time for Valentine's Day. We are... wait, is it... No, I was going to say we're recording this on Valentine's Day. I'm a week ahead.
I'm a week ahead of time.
It's the 7th.
Maybe by the time you listen to this, it will be / have been Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day from Brie and me to you. Wear a condom. Take a pill. And dream. Okay, just a little disclaimer in the beginning. I want you to forgive me for calling them male and female condoms.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I don't know what, like, the current names are, but this is what they're referred to in all my research. So that's what I will be using today.
Okay.
And yeah, that means I'm talking about the condom.
What?
I know. I actually weirdly want to start with the female condom.
Oh, so weird.
It is weird because I feel like, in my mind, the male condom was first, and then the female condom kind of happened because... They were like, why are only men, you know, allowed to wrap their willy? and so the reason I am is because the history of that, like, recorded goes back further. And in terms of the female condom, the first ever mention is that of King Minos of Crete. Are you familiar?
I've heard of him. I don't remember the right pronunciation.
Minos. Who was said to ejaculate serpents and scorpions in his semen.
Ouch.
Ouch is right. He actually killed his mistress with his ejaculation. And so he wanted to protect his wife.
God, the stuff of legends.
He saw his mistress die and he was like, uh-oh, the girl I'm cheating on needs to be protected. And so Pasiphae, then, I mean, the wording is weird here, and I tried to, like, be careful about the wording, but it is said that it was inserted into Pasiphae, which is problematic, I think, but whatever.
The female condom?
Right.
Why is that problematic?
Because it wasn't like she put the female condom in herself.
Oh, she didn't choose to have it.
Is my impression of what this is. Anyway, that is one example. Another example is the archaic Jukas, which inhabited modern New Guinea. They inserted a female condom. And then since then, like, it never really was mentioned or kind of used or whatever. Flash forward 1 million years. And it was more developed in the early 20th century because feminists disliked that, like, the modern male condom was the only thing that was like it. Mm-hmm. Like, there should be a way for women to kind of create that barrier physically without having to rely on the man to put on the condom.
Quick question. Did it say in any of these articles what they think the female condom was made out of? Because I know male condoms, we talked a little bit.
Yes, I will be going back through the male condom history. But the female condom was made of rubber at this time, because that is what the male condom was being made out of.
No, I mean in, like, ancient times. Was it, like, the same material that
the bladder of a goat.
Okay.
The bladder of a goat was used on King Minos. Okay. I don't know what the Jukas used.
Okay.
I only remember the goat.
That's fine. I was just curious if anybody mentioned what the old-timey ones were.
Yes. Okay. So, but then the later on we had rubber.
Yeah.
So they were using rubber. And Marie Stopes was the first to advertise the female condom in 1923. But it actually wasn't popular at all still, even though they were trying to push it out until 1990, mm-hmm. when a petition came from 30,000. It was written by 30,000, or signed by 30,000 women in Zimbabwe, because they didn't have or feel like they had the proper protection because, like, long story short, like, there was a lot of, like, aggressive male sexual energy mm-hmm. in... mm-hmm. I yep. just... It wasn't called something other than that, so I don't want to call it something other than that. Like, make an assumption. But we can make an assumption. And so they signed this petition for a manufacturing company to provide them with female condoms. And so it kind of awoke the, like, westernized culture mm-hmm. to... oh, this is something that people need, and we should kind of also use it or whatever, because they didn't really have birth control in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And so they made or manufactured female condoms, sent them to Zimbabwe, and then other places, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the, like, health care people in Zimbabwe and the women or whatever, it was, like, well-received, because mm-hmm. they needed it. So that's why, like, in terms of the female condom, why the male condom is so westernized. And the female condom generally, because we don't really, like, in my impression as a non-woman, mm-hmm. we don't really, like, it's not really a popular thing.
No, not really. Yeah. I don't think I've ever spoken to another woman about using a female condom.
Exactly. It is about the male putting on the condom. I think in non-Western cultures, that is something that is a little more used. So
interesting.
It is interesting, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I understand that because... from the situation you were talking about, it
exactly.
sounds like the need arose more as a form of protection and protecting
literal
oneself
protection.
From, like, not only pregnancy, but also disease.
As we know, what was happening in the 90s in Zimbabwe, 1 million people in Zimbabwe alone had HIV.
Right, yeah. So that's a huge thing, whereas Western, I mean, the condom accomplishes the same thing,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like we think about it more as, like, a... less of, like, a violent thing.
Right.
Which technically,
is, yeah.
it's not all the time. But.
Right. T. So for the modern male condom, in ancient Egypt, evidence... actually, not ancient Egypt. In the 11th century. evidence in Egypt shows that people used linen sheaths for sexual protection.
No! Scratchy!
Linen?
No!
I only use soft linen.
Not any linen.
You don't want linen?
No!
Well, the ancient Romans used the sheaths too, but they were made of bladder, so maybe that would be better for you.
Give me a bladder any day.
Give me a bladder. Wrap it in a bladder.
Oh, God.
There is recorded use of what is called glans condoms for birth control, and those mean that they're specifically just cover the head, which is... crazy. Never heard of that before. Good enough.
It seems not good enough.
Seems
but...
good enough.
Okay.
In China, glans condoms were made of lamb intestines or oiled silk paper. Leave it to China.
The reoccurrence of intestines in this story already just proves to me how important sex is to humans.
It's just like before rubber, this is what was used. As we know in the sports episode, like... we used that for, like, pigskin, literal pigskin.
I know. My modern-day sensibilities are, like, grossed out by it, but I'm sure of the time it was very normal.
Very normal, very practical.
Yeah.
It's like when people wear, like, real furs or skins or something like that. It sounds, like, weird to say, but it's, like, a little normal. That's kind of what it was mm-hmm. just, like, this is a material that just exists in nature that is well-usable before they were able to find and discover and make, like, be able to manufacture rubber.
Yeah.
In Japan, they had something called the kubatagata, and these were made of tortoise shell or animal horn. Isn't that crazy?
Okay.
And what they say about this one is it also helped for erectile dysfunction for obvious reasons.
It's like a splint.
Yeah. Not a splint.
Oh, God.
Anyway, at the end of the 15th century, syphilis was rampant. It started among French troops and then spread across Europe and then made its way to Asia. Syphilis at this time was a very horrific disease, being described as causing flesh to fall off faces and quick death. In 16th century Italy, Catholic priest Gabriel Fallopio, who also has something to do with fallopian tubes, like I think maybe he named it, he wrote a book titled De Morbo Gallico, or The French Disease, which I think is quite interesting because China virus, like, we have the parallel of that today, but then it was because, like, it was supposedly first isolated in France, it is, like, the French disease, even though it was just a disease
Spanish
that
flu.
Existed.
Spanish flu. Did not flu. Come from Spain, but
literally,
we
but
call
it's,
it Spanish flu.
Also because it was French troops, and troops, you know, like, go somewhere else.
Yeah, notorious for traveling.
Notorious for trooping around, getting syphilis. So in his book that he created, that name was The French Disease, in order to combat syphilis, he claims to have invented a little device made of linen sheets soaked in chemicals. Don't ask me what chemicals. And then hung to dry. And once dry, you place them over the penis and tie a little bow at the base to secure.
Adorable.
A little sack.
So cute.
So cute for a little condom. He also claimed to have performed a trial of this device on 1,100 men. None of
just
them.
Just in his own personal spare
exactly.
time.
Exactly. He himself was like, come here. Because he had syphilis. It was bad.
Oh, God.
And none of them contracted syphilis, so.
What? Hey.
Not one of the 1,100.
I mean, those are pretty good odds. A plus.
They also never had sex. It was 1,100 virgins. And he just used it for...
He's like, just wear this
claim.
And
yeah.
see if you, like, attract syphilis from the air around you.
What would our world be?
Dead. I don't know.
I mean, they wouldn't be sexual diseases. They wouldn't be STIs.
Oh.
They would be airborne diseases.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It would be a different category entirely.
Doesn't matter. In 1666, the English Birth Rate Commission documented that condoms showed a downward birth rate. So now we're transferring from STI to more of a contraceptive.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time that we get to mention anything close to the word condom. They called it condon.
Okay.
With an N.
Okay. In France?
England.
Okay. It doesn't really matter. I'm just trying to think of spelling.
At this time, too, they were using intestine. And because they were using intestine to make rubber gloves since the 13th century, you know, this was, you know, this is kind of a better explanation of what I was saying earlier about pigskin. You know, it's just like this was already happening. So it was normal to them to be like, we can use this to stretch across
I guess
and
they probably treated it, too. In my mind, it's just, like, raw guts. But I'm sure
it's
they...
It's definitely cured.
Cured it in some way.
And as we know here, too, they treat it with chemicals and let that dry.
Yeah.
Now, in the 18th century, I wrote in my notes the condemnation of condoms. That's so stupid. We got the condemnation of condoms because John Campbell, English physician Daniel Turner, and French medical professor Jean Ostruck all wrote about how bad condoms were. And some people said that it didn't provide full protection against everything, especially disease. Like maybe it would against birth, but not disease. And some said that it was a easier way for you to have sex with unsafe people. Quote unquote, problematic.
I mean, all of that is technically true.
But the world didn't care. Condoms were the it girl sold in pubs, barbershops, markets, even at the theater.
Wow.
We were just at the theater, we could have picked up a condom.
They were sold everywhere. The barbershop, I think, is the most...
Makes the most sense, yeah.
What? I was going to say is the most fascinating to me.
Well, you know, you go there and you get your, you know, self shaven real quick for a sexy time.
Okay.
They should trim pubes at barbershops. Anyway.
There's other places for that.
But I want to go to European Wax Center. This is a trend that kind of occurs in history, is like people talk about how condoms are bad and then the world is like, we're going to buy more. So I'm not going to talk about how that kind of keeps the trend keeps going, but that keeps going throughout the entire history. Americans didn't start using the condom until the 19th century. Classic. After the American Revolution.
Like, and any form of the condom? Including, like, sheepskin?
No. I think they used other forms of birth control, but they did not use the condom.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Also, up until this time, condoms were quite expensive. Maybe that helped cause some of the problem of condoms.
Can I tell you a fact that I learned during my research really quick?
Sure.
So I, because I'm doing, spoiler alert, birth control pills, mm-hmm. there was a lot that led up before that.
Mm-hmm.
So in some of the research that showed up, it was that when colonizers came to America, Native women had been using, like, herbal remedies to try and, like, keep the birth rates low. And apparently, Native women, when they were in, like, good-ish terms with the colonizers who came, were, like, sharing with the white women, like, what they did to help keep birth rates down and to, like, keep disease-free and stuff like that. And the women were listening to them, but then it was, like, a religious thing where they were like, you can't use any birth control because that's defying God's will for women and children. So they stopped. Or maybe they didn't start at all, but they were, like, told how to do it and then, like, didn't use the herbal remedies from the Native people.
There you go.
Yeah.
And if you won't use the herbal remedy, you probably won't use a condom.
I guess.
Yeah, I also read earlier, like, in just general, like, contraceptives and stuff like that, is, like, people would wear amulets.
Oh, yeah.
And
just magic,
have sex.
Magic,
and magic
the disease
would
away.
Cause no pregnancy.
Yeah. Mm,
yep.
I guess that checks out, though, because all of the, like, early colonizers to the Americas were deeply religious people.
So. Yeah, and we're going to get into that a little more later, okay. But it's part of the trend. like I said, condoms were very expensive at this time, and one author noted that for a prostitute, a single condom could cost a month's pay. Which is like, what's the point? Because you're a prostitute.
The prostitutes had to buy them? Are these female condoms?
No, this is a male condom.
And the prostitutes had to buy the male condoms?
Because I bet you the man wouldn't.
I guess. Are they reusable? As gross as that sounds.
Yeah.
Okay.
At this time, condoms are reusable.
Okay.
You can wash them and reuse them.
Okay.
So as we know on the sports episode as well, vulcanized rubber was invented by Charles Goodyear or Thomas Hancock around 1840, and the first rubber condom was produced in 1855. The skin condom was still less expensive, so it was still used more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called. It's the, like, bladder or intestine mm-hmm. condom. But the rubber condom was now able to be used and was also washable and reusable. Also, at first, rubber condoms only covered the head, like mm-hmm. the old, like, Chinese and Japanese condoms.
The gland condom.
And so you had to go to your doctor to measure to get the proper size. But soon, manufacturers were creating one size fits all.
Wow.
So they started with that, but then they were like, oh, wait, no.
We don't want to get measured at the doctor.
I don't want, yeah, right, because it was probably scientists.
Yeah, nothing. I was just, it dawned on me what has to happen for the doctor to accurately measure what size condom you need.
Interesting.
Did you
Not
think
quick
about
enough.
That?
I didn't think about that. Anyway, nearing the end of the 1800s, the Comstock laws mm-hmm. caused a lot of problems, including the banning of mailing contraceptive information. And in 30 states, the manufacture and sale of condoms was banned. 30 states.
Yeah, I know. I had to talk a lot about that.
Similar problems occurred in Europe, and people created lingo to get around the hurdles of ordering condoms. Calling them something, a little something for the weekend. And that's so funny because that phrase, a little something for the weekend, was used in, like, Britain until, like, late
90s. That's so funny to me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It just became a trend.
Is that when we started calling them rubbers? And that's why there's that, like, disconnect where in America,
mm-hmm.
a rubber is a condom, but in England, it's an eraser?
The invention of rubber just occurred.
Yeah.
And then, yes, because it was kind of like a weird, trendy
Cheeky
thing
little,
to call it. Yeah.
A little something for the weekend.
A little something for the weekend.
So funny.
Yeah. It was also called male shield, but
mm-hmm.
in Ireland, it was the strictest, and condoms were banned until 1970.
Catholic.
Catholic.
Wow.
In the Western world, condoms remained the number one contraceptive. With the dawn of a few world wars, the U.S. and Britain were the only ones not to provide condoms to the military during World War I, and this caused 400,000 cases of syphilis and gonorrhea among the American military alone.
Oh.
Which is, I don't want to read into that, but okay.
You mean how, in fact, they contracted that?
Sexually, obviously, yeah. But I'm like, what?
I mean, we know from, like,
history.
Miss Saigon.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Things like that. It's just, like, in here, it's, like, just a fact. Like, there are 400,000 cases of syphilis and gonorrhea among the military, and you're just like, let's dive a little deeper. dive a little deeper. But in Germany, 1912, Julius Fromm developed an easier manufacturing method which involved dipping a glass mold into the rubber solution, and he created Fromm's Act, which was the first named condom company. And Germany exported, like, particularly this company exported across Europe and the world, including Canada and Australia. So this is a popular little company. During the 1920s, America finally eased up. And condoms were able to thrive.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Worldwide condom sales doubled in the 1920s because of latex.
Oh.
The Young's Rubber Company was the first to manufacture latex condoms. They are also the company behind Trojan condoms.
Oh, well.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Latex is stronger and thinner. More pleasure. And of course it took off. In 1930, the London Rubber Company made their version of latex condom and called it Durex.
Oh.
We're taking off. It's so funny because, like, of course, when we make the thing that makes the most modern sense, like latex, mm-hmm. it's going to be the companies that still last today.
Yeah.
Not the companies that were involved in rubber. It's like the people that were birthed, interesting choice of words, at that moment. During this decade, though, the Roman Catholic Church, speaking of, condemned all contraceptives.
Yep.
I think they still keep that to this day.
I think vaguely. I don't know what this new pope, because the new pope is like the chillest
woke.
Pope. The woke pope.
The woke pope.
So I don't know what his stance is on that, but I think, yeah, for the most part, it's been to this day where they're like, not for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, though, 1.5 million condoms are used every day in the U.S. alone. Because it's 1930, and it is...
1930. The Great Depression.
The Great Depression. Condoms were so popular because, and I quote, condoms are cheaper than children.
Yeah. They are.
So, yes, they kept thriving, kept growing. A little later, the Food and Drug Administration labeled condoms as a drug so that manufacturers could test condoms properly. Because up until this point, there wasn't a, like, standard for condoms. And a lot would, like, go through holes. I also read that if you had a faulty condom and you were, like, a high-end company, you would sell that faulty condom under a, like, low-end crappy brand name.
Espionage.
Literally.
Oh,
just to
God.
Sell that. I know, that was shady stuff. But now it's all over thanks to the FDA. When a biochemist tested this right before the FDA thing, tested like 2,000 condoms, they found that 60% had leaks.
Oh my God.
60%!
Oh, geez. Those are not great odds.
Yeah.
Wow.
Random fun fact just thrown in here. In 1960, Japan used more condoms per person than anyone in the world.
Oh my God.
Go off, Japan.
On that tiny island, there's no space for more children. It makes sense.
Per person.
Yeah.
Right. So, like,
so everyone's using a bunch more condoms because there's no space for children on the small island. What am I? Am I misunderstanding what you're saying?
No, you're. I think you are understanding. I thought you were saying that, like, there wasn't space for more people to use condoms. How are they using condoms?
No, I meant they're using more condoms because there's no space to create more people.
And isn't there? Oh, no, that was China. Anyway.
That's China.
Today, 450 million condoms are sold in the U.S. each year.
Wow.
Which is like, is that enough?
I was going to say I almost expect more than that.
That's 1 year.
But if you're thinking about population of people who are using condoms, we can, like, mostly count out, let's say, like, I don't know, 15 and under.
No.
And then
They should be using condoms
more. I mean, they
more.
Should be, but I'm saying people who, like, would normally.
Right, the majority.
If we're thinking about, like, the most average age group of people who are using condoms, it's much smaller than the full population of the United States.
Right.
Yeah.
Still, though, seems kind of low.
It does seem a little low.
But they aren't the number one contraceptive.
Oh.
As of 1960, a certain little pill took that
the
over.
The pill?
Willow pill.
Not willow pill.
And Bree's going to tell you about that.
I am pill. Right now.
Please.
Okay. Thank you for that very smooth transition, Josh. I'm going to tell you about the birth control pill.
What if you weren't doing the birth control pill?
Right. I surprised you and I was like, I'm doing the diaphragm. I don't know.
The diaphragm.
You. Yeah, it's another like internal form of birth
control.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. That's right.
It looks like one of those little things called poppets. Remember when we were kids, you would get those little like silicone circles that you would push down in the middle and they would stick to things and like randomly pop up? That's exactly what a diaphragm looks
like. I know, because
like.
When I saw one, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not covering that, though, so I'm going to talk about the birth control pill. Before I do want to briefly mention this because the history of the birth control pill, and I think really all birth control, is very much tied to a specific to the United States history of sterilization of women, unwanted, unwilling sterilization, primarily of Native people, people of color, poor people, immigrants, basically, mentally ill people, basically anyone that they deemed unworthy or undeserving of having children. It was like a huge thing in the U.S. So in 1907 is when they began enacting these policies across the country that gave the government the right to sterilize people against their will. This has gone on for years. It is still happening in some places.
Wow.
And there are very strong links to it in birth control, but the history of sterilization is really long and complicated. And I felt like it would both be too long of an episode if I covered both that and the birth control pill, and I don't think it would do it very much justice. So we're not going to focus on it today, but I did want to mention that a lot of the history of birth control pills stems from this, like, awful practice. So that's where we're starting, specifically with Margaret Sanger, who was a public health nurse at the time, and she witnessed this practice of sterilization being carried out and felt that, quote, enforced motherhood is the most complete denial of a woman's right to life and liberty. So she begins to call contraceptives birth control and has received credit for coining that term. And then in 1916, she opened up her and also the very first birth control clinic in the United States in Brooklyn. That's where
of course.
So as we discussed a tiny bit, people have always felt some type of way about birth control and women choosing things for themselves. So there are a lot of complaints about Margaret and her clinic, and she is arrested and convicted of maintaining a public nuisance and spends a month in jail. So not too long, but she is jailed for it. After she's released, she gets right back to it, despite more complaints and more arrests. And then in 1917, she starts publishing and distributing a magazine called Birth Control Review in an effort to spread awareness of options for women when it comes to birth control. This is all lovely and great, fine, dandy, and Margaret wants to make it easier for women to get birth control and wants to fund research into an oral method of birth control that interacts with the body rather than a physical object being used. Now, here is where it becomes a little murky when it comes to Margaret's intentions with birth control. We know that she's against sterilization because she has this whole quote about it, and that's what she said. However, sterilization has a lot of very strong links to eugenics, and Margaret very publicly stated that birth control is nothing more or less than the facilitation of the process of weeding out the unfit and of preventing the birth of defectives. So she, she said this thing where it was like, oh, you believe in eugenics, despite her also saying that she's like against sterilization and forced motherhood is bad. So the reasons behind her like want for birth control,
I think they still align. It's just like, that's good that you don't want
Well, they align
forced
because
sterilization. But also, you want to choose to be able to continue your elitist line of perfect children.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, it's it's difficult to say what she actually believed in because we can't sit down and ask her. It is claimed, though, that Margaret actually did disagree with some of the ideas associated with eugenics, but the theory is that she made public statements like this to get more people on her side when it came to birth control and the reason for distributing it, because eugenics at this point in time was a really popular theory amongst scientists of like, what if we could do this? So the theory is that she doesn't really believe that, but she's just trying to get as many people as possible to be like pro birth control.
Okay. Benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of the doubt. We're going to say for now, I guess, that that was the case. We don't really know, though. So Margaret Sanger goes on to found the American Birth Control League in 1921. Yay, great. 18 years pass by, and now there are almost 400 state-sponsored community birth control clinics across the U.S. Yay, we're winning.
State-sponsored.
State-sponsored. This many clinics means more birth control advocacy groups, and in 1939, these groups would join forces with the American Birth Control League to create the Birth Control Federation of America, which would change its name 2 years later to Planned Parenthood Federation of America.
Like, had to be. Could see that from a mile.
They became Planned Parenthood.
Wow.
So. Oof.
Well, we know how it turns out for them.
It's now the 1950s, and Margaret Sanger is in her 80s. But research is finally being done on an oral contraceptive pill. And so Margaret organizes supporters to fund research efforts, including securing $2 million from Catherine McCormick, a philanthropist and suffragette.
I was like, I know that name.
Do you?
Yeah.
From what?
I don't know.
Oh, just history.
Yeah, history. Yeah. Feminism.
Yes, feminism. She is feminism.
She is feminism.
She is feminism.
Also, Margaret, in your 80s, girl, you better organize.
She was, like, still working towards it, so good for her. Chemist Russell Market had realized that the wild yam, cabeza de negro, that was used by Mexican women for birth control, could be used to create plant-based progesterone, which could then be synthesized into progestin, a hormone that's vital to the success of birth control pills. It was thought that combining progestin with estrogen within a pill could interrupt the ovulation process and prevent pregnancy. So this is the research that they've been working on. Two biologists named John Rock and Gregory Pincus then worked together on the research and like carrying out trials for this pill that they had created from this idea. And in doing so, they did a lot of morally questionable things.
Of course. Two boys.
Yes. I'm going to tell you about them right now.
Yum.
So as we had talked about, state laws at this time banned the distribution of contraceptives along with all information pretty much associated with them. So in order to conduct a scientific study on birth control, researchers would have to distribute contraceptives. So they weren't allowed to test the birth control pill within the United States. So where do they go to test their drug? They went to Puerto Rico.
Of course. I was like, give me a...
Yep. So the laws didn't apply in Puerto Rico. And here they basically just lied to and coerced poor women into clinical trials telling college students that they would fail their classes if they did not participate.
Oh,
so they were literally like lying and manipulating and forcing people to participate in this study on an untested drug. They also attempted to test the pill on patients in mental institutions within the United States because the rules either, this was kind of unclear, the rules either didn't extend to mentally ill patients or they were so overlooked that no one really cared what happened to the patients, so they could kind of do it like under the radar and nobody would report it. But again, these patients were either unwilling to participate or unable to consent to the trials because they're mentally ill, so they don't, you know, have the facilities to say yes or no.
So they didn't participate?
No, they did.
Oh.
They just participated either against their will or, you know, if somebody's in a mental state and they say yes, that's not like a, it's not a real yes, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So these studies were not even very effective, as the women in mental institutions were not generally sexually active. And issues with psychosis can disrupt the menstrual cycle. So they couldn't even really prove that it was working based off of observing their menstrual cycles. Doctors Rock and Pincus also tested the drug on male inmates. For what reason, we didn't really know, because the funding specifically was given for women's birth control pills. They like said, we don't want men's birth control pills. So outside of like...
Maybe it was like a Hail Mary. Like, if this doesn't work for women.
Maybe, or it was just like gross curiosity or something of like, I wonder what's going to happen, because they didn't consider these people
bored.
Anyways, they didn't see any results, obviously, besides apparently there was one inmate who, after being exposed to this birth control pill for 5 months, reported shrunken testicles. So there was that side effect of the birth control pill for men.
He just had small balls all along.
Maybe.
And was like, oh my God.
And he's mentally ill, so he's like, oh, what happened?
This pill caused my small balls to get smaller.
I really don't know. But in the end, the drug was only truly successfully tested on just 130 women.
Oh my God, all that for no reason.
Yeah, this, as we know, this is a dismally small group of people, but Dr. Pincus made the numbers look larger by talking about menstrual cycles observed and not like women observed or like test subjects observed. So he wrote in his notes, in the 1,279 cycles during which the regime of treatment was meticulously followed, there was not a single pregnancy. So in these 130 women, there were no pregnancies, but he made it seem larger by counting menstrual cycles over the course of several months.
Interesting.
Rather than women.
Smart.
Smart, but also a lie.
A lie.
So
fake.
By fudging the numbers, they
not
were...
Not fudging.
Fudging. Faking. Lying. They were able to get the birth control pill approved by the FDA in 1957 on the basis of these studies, quote unquote.
Wow.
Yeah.
Come on, FDA. Really reliable.
I know. It is at this time only approved as a treatment for severe or painful periods, though. It is not approved for the use of birth control.
Oh, that's not, that's different.
It's weird. So what happens? Complaints of severe period pains skyrocket at doctor's appointments, and more women are giving a prescription for the pill because they're doing it on purpose. The women know that this pill, prevents birth.
I hurt.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's happening so much that in 3 years, the FDA folds and approves the pill to be prescribed for the use of birth control.
So like you're doing it anyway.
Exactly. That's literally what it is. You guys are doing it anyway, so might as well be legal.
Let's label it.
Yeah. So I'm not, I guess you might know, I wrote that I wasn't sure if the laws that we had talked about were only in effect in certain states or if it was the whole country.
Certain states.
Certain states. Okay. I did know.
Notoriously certain states.
Yeah. Specifically in Connecticut and Massachusetts, because that's where a lot of these studies were taking place.
Also, that's so funny, though. Those were the two longest running Comstock laws.
And that makes sense.
Because
yeah.
By the time, like, every other one, there were two states left, and it was
Connecticut
those
and
two
Massachusetts.
States.
Yeah. Well, in those states, it was illegal to take or distribute birth control, and if you did, you could be fined or jailed. So this law has existed a long time. It finally ends up being overturned in 1965, but only for married people specifically.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's still in place for unmarried women and would remain that way until 1972. So unmarried women had to wait just a little bit longer for birth control.
Seems like it should be the opposite, huh?
I don't know.
Like maybe they need birth control more.
Unmarried women?
Because...
Well, in theory, if you're thinking like a 1960s politician, the only women having sex are married women.
Fair.
So they're the ones who need birth control.
But then let that woman have a baby and then you'll feel different.
Yeah.
When you're like this single wench with her child.
Single wench. Yeah, exactly. But we know they don't care about single wenches.
Neither do I.
Great. By 1967, 13 million people are using the pill worldwide, and more brands and manufacturers are beginning to appear. The early version of the pill, though, having had not very much testing at all, is linked to higher risk of blood clots, heart attacks, strokes, and cancer. And after several congressional hearings on the safety of these pills for women, the amount of estrogen in birth control pills is dramatically lowered in 1970, and doctors today will always try and prescribe the lowest possible dosage. Mm. Pills today also come in different forms, so you can either get estrogen only or what's called the combination pill, which is progestin and estrogen, which I think is more common than estrogen only because of these, like, older studies with links to all these side effects, which I don't really think happens anymore. But I do remember, like, talking with my mom about birth control, I think when I was in high school or something, and she didn't want me and my sister to go on it because of these studies of links to, like, cancer and mm-hmm. blood clots and all these things. But I think it's a little outdated, so it's safer now. So in 1978, the Supreme Court ruled that no state can place any restrictions on the sale, distribution, or advertisement of contraceptives. So we've come a long way. I'm going to go over this last little bit briefly because it's about political things with birth control. In 2010, Congress passes the Affordable Care Act, which prohibits sex discrimination in health insurance and requires coverage of all preventative health care without copays. In 2011, the Obama administration issued regulations defining preventative health care to include coverage of all FDA-approved forms of contraception, which is amazing. We feel very happy about that. We shouldn't have to pay for that sort of thing because it helps everyone in the long run. But then we enter the Trump era, where there is a lot of rollbacks. Yep. So Trump manages to pass legislation that allows employers to deny birth control coverage on religious or moral grounds. Mm. So that means that anyone who couldn't pay out-of-pocket costs loses access to birth control. As of May 2021, 29 states and the District of Columbia require insurers to cover prescriptions for birth control. Only 8 of these states, though, prevent employers and insurers from refusing to cover birth control. The others allow for some exceptions. So what this means is that insurance-covered access to birth control is only guaranteed in 8 states. And that's the history of the birth control pill for you. We are in a constant battle back and forth of women's health care.
It's insane. It's not insane, but it's like...
I mean...
It's insane, but it's not surprising.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
It's just like, what? I can't believe that today.
Yeah, I know.
But forgive my tuition.
Completely unrelated struggle. Forgive my tuition.
I don't care about your babies. I want my $10,000, Biden. I like that. This is typically like a right-wing southern voice, but mm-hmm. I'm being like a leftist. I want my free health care.
A southern leftist.
Not birth control. I can get why people are pro-life.
Oh, stop it. I can't even begin to... I know you agree with me, but I can't begin to have this conversation.
No, you literally can't have this conversation.
Yeah. Anyways,
but we can say thank you.
Support women.
No, I shan't.
Thank you.
Thank you, men, for listening. No, I can't keep this narrative
thank
going.
Thank you, only men, for listening.
This is now a male-only podcast.
This is the new Joe Rogan experience.
Oh, my God. Kill me. Would die. Not the Joe Rogan. This is Joe Rogan, too.
This is Joshua Rogan.
Joshua Rogan, my Bob. I hate that. And thank you so much for listening, everyone. All genders.
All types of you out there.
All types of you. Aw, that's sweet. If you have any theme suggestions for us, you can send them over to thingamabobpodcast@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram at thingamabobpodcast or on Twitter at thingamabobpod. While you're there, give us a follow and please subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Please leave us a review. It really helps us show up on the iTunes charts and the new and recommended page. Also, join our Patreon. It's a great way to show support, and we have new content coming out on our page every week. About to film one right now. Special thanks to our current Patreon producers and co-producers, Emma is Cooler Than Josh, Alex F., Number One Fan Nicole, and Fox Queen 22. Make sure to join us next week where we put on your big girl boots and walk down the street looking fierce in your Louboutins. Louboutin boots.
Thank you, Dolly. And thank you for joining us, because now we are all two things smarter.
Are we?
And safer.
Beanie Bob!